Welcome to Nothing Ever Happens in Canada, but we know this is simply not true. I'm Canadian Girl. Thanks for joining me today. In honor of Women's History Month, I wanted to look at one of our great Canadian women from right here in Canada, because they're often forgotten stories that are often unwritten. Thanks to the lady in our story today, hers remains to be told over and over as she wrote her tales of adventure in the form of a memoir, leaving her mark, as you could say, in stone. This week, we're going to look at the amazing tales of Sarah Edmonds. She is Canada's very own master of disguise, chopping her own hair off and choosing to live life as a man. She would join the Civil War, would become a nurse and a spy, crossing many times into enemy lines. I am going to throw out here a mild warning. In this episode, I'm going to mention some things like swear words, terrible fathers, the treating of mothers and children poorly. There will be some discussion of war and things of that nature. That being said, I will not be going into anything of graphic details, so no worries there. But if these are triggers for you, maybe skip this episode and try a different one. Grab some popcorn, pretzels, chips, or whatever it is you fancy. This is gonna be a good one. And grab some for me too. I'm just kidding, guys. Join me now as we follow Sarah Edmonds on her adventurous tale. In December 1841, Canada's very own master disguise is born. Her name for now, Sarah Emma Evelyn Edmondson. All these names would come in handy when you're the master of disguise. There are many versions of Sarah's story. In some stories, she is called Emma. In others, she is called Sarah. In the end, she chose to go by Sarah. So I'm going to honor her wishes and call her Sarah. She lived on a farm in Mogotovic, New Brunswick, which is about 740 kilometers northwest of St. John's, New Brunswick, with her mother Betsy and her father Isaac. Well, I'm just going to say it here. He was a real jerk. He abused her mother and all six children. He belittled them and was an angry, terrible man. He had five daughters, which he wanted none of. He quickly sold them off, one by one, as young wives. He did have a son who was weak and unable to help on the farm. When Sarah was born, she was the last and the youngest child. He was furious. He wanted a boy so bad to help him on his farm. He never let poor Sarah forget that. She would discover her passion for adventure from a book given to her by a peddler who stopped by the farm one day. The book was called Fanny Campbell, the Female Pirate. It was about a woman who goes to sea to rescue her fiancé and ends up becoming a commander of a pirate ship. She is indeed a fictional character, but some published reports after the book was released claimed her to be real. Fanny also dressed up like a man in the story in order to pursue her adventures. Edmonds admits in her memoirs that she got the idea to dress herself as a man from this novel. In 1856, it came time for Sarah to be sold off to a creepy widowed old neighbor that had started coming around the farm. She was 15 years old. That's right, 15. But our girl Sarah, she was smart. She knew what her piece of shit father was up to. And her mother, bless her heart, she helped Sarah escape one night. Her mother Betsy, too, had been a part of arranged marriage to, unfortunately, Sarah's father Isaac. And we all know how that worked out. So she chose to help her daughter flee the farm one night and stay with a relative in Moncton, New Brunswick. Here she would begin her first step of her disguise. In her new home, 232 kilometers away to the east under her new name, Sarah Edmonds. She dropped the O-N from the end of her name. She would live and work in Moncton for 1 year as a lady's hat maker. It is said she was quite good at it. There is also reports that within the first year, she managed to become co-owners of the business, but I could not find solid proof of this claim. No matter what she accomplished, she remained fearful of her father and that he would find her. And what happened next, I'm not exactly sure. Some reports say he found her, some say he did not. But what we do know is Sarah up and left New Brunswick quickly, sporting her best disguise yet. Meet Franklin Flint Thompson, a traveling Bible salesman. That's right, our girl Sarah cut off her hair all by herself, put some stain on her face to look more rugged, and put on a pair of pants, which was unheard of for a lady back then. She became the best Bible salesman her company had seen in 30 years, according to her very own boss. She would first cross the U.S. border into Hartford, Connecticut, later to find herself in Michigan, when President Lincoln would put out the call for men to enlist in the Civil War. Her being a Canadian woman, she did not have to fight in the war at all, but she felt it was her duty to serve her new adopted country. It is estimated that about 50,000 Canadians went south to fight, most with the intent to end the nonsense going on. Sarah was one of those Canadians. And she was one of what is believed to be 400 women who disguised themselves as men and went to war. On April 12, 1861, at 19 years old, she would try to enlist in the Civil War, but be turned down due to a height requirement. She was only 5'6". Not long after that, the height restriction was lowered, as the president would call again for 75,000 more troops. While standing waiting for a train, Sarah would hear a newspaper boy call out the headline for more troops being needed. On May 25th, 1861, she would try again. At this time, medical exams were not needed, as they were desperate for men. After answering only a few questions and demonstrating a firm handshake, she would be sent on through and enlisted in Company F of the 2nd Michigan Infantry, known as the Flint Union Grays. She was known as Private Frank Thompson. She was physically strong from being raised on a farm in rural Canada. She was used to being outdoors, knew how to ride a horse, and fire a gun. She had a few things up on these city boys, but she was careful not to stand out that much, as she was trying to blend in. When basic training was over, she was first assigned a nursing position and postman duties for her brigade. On July 15, 1861, her regiment was ordered to Bull Run, which is a stream, from my understanding, near an area of interest to this battle at the Manassas Junction in Virginia, where the Confederate troops were known to be. Okay, let me tell you what I know and how far we're going to get into this. A lot of this is American history due to it being the Civil War. I want to stay focused on Sarah's story here. There are many podcasts out there that can tell you the history of the Civil War in great detail and pronounce it properly, so do not take any of this being absolutely correct, as this is a Canadian podcast, and I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to the Civil War. What I can tell you in a nutshell is that all we really need to know for this story is there is a war going on. We know that. Who's fighting and what for? We have 11 Confederate states that are pieces of shit like Sarah's father, and they think they can control people by using something as awful as slavery, and then they will stand and fight for it. Disgusting, right? Then we have the Union, who say F these guys, and we're not letting them do this anymore. On July 21st, at the Battle of Bull Run, Sarah is thrown into her first ever battle on the field. As a nurse serving under General George McClellan, the battle would begin at 6 a.m. and by 4 p.m. the next day, it would turn treacherous for Sarah and the other Union soldiers. She was pushing through hordes of retreating soldiers and found herself at a stone church that had been set up as a makeshift hospital on the battlefield. She would volunteer there to attend to the wounded and dying. In March 1862, she would be assigned mail duty for her regiment. She would ride 40 kilometers a day to pick up mail and deliver it. It was a very dangerous job. She would even write in her memoirs of a time she had to ride through scattered papers all over the road from a mail carrier who had been ambushed and killed the day before. Later on that same month, her regiment would be shipped out to Virginia as a part of General McClellan's Peninsula Campaign. From April 5th to May the 4th, they would take part in the Siege of Yorktown. She would soldier through the Second Bull Run and the Battle of Fredericksburg. Historians do call Sarah's bluff, as they state she could not be at all the battles that she claims to be. But for this story, I'll just throw them out there when I have them, because I'm not a historian and I'm not judging what I don't know. This is also when Sarah claims her spy games would begin. I state she claims here as well. Accounts are only found in her memoirs. There is very little to no military documentation, as it would have been a secret operation, and very little can be verified elsewhere through people's journals and diaries. In Richmond, Virginia, the opportunity to become a spy would come up. When the man who was the regiment's spy before had been caught by enemy lines and killed, her friend James Vesey had just been killed in an ambush, and she claimed that she saw this as a way to honor her fallen friend. She volunteered for the position at once. Now, here reports different. Some say she sat with a group of high-ranking officials and was cleared to be a spy. Others say her head was examined by a doctor who practiced the art of phrenology, which is when a doctor feels one's head and determines by the lumps and bumps on it. Basically, he determined that Sarah had the right bumps to be a spy. Traveling back and forth to cross enemy lines meant Sarah needed many disguises. It is estimated by some she crossed enemy lines about 11 times undetected. Her first and craziest act of disguise would be when she wore a dark wig and took silver nitrate, which is an inorganic compound and chemical formula which is close to many other silver compounds, such as those used in photography, but is far less sensitive to light, and she put it all over her skin to darken it, to cross enemy lines into a Yorktown camp, going by the name of Cuff. She would do one day's hard labor, and her hands became so blistered she worried she'd become caught. She managed to trade jobs with a water bearer. This allowed her to move freely throughout the camp, delivering water to all. She did this, and as she did, she made sketches and gathered intel about enemy fortifications. Sarah managed to sneak out of the camp in the middle of the night when she claims an officer handed her a gun and told her to stand watch. She would slip away into the trees and return to her camp with the intel she had gathered. General McClellan was able to take over the Confederates' forts with such accuracy and force that the Confederates had no choice but to abandon their post. She even claimed to have once been assigned to a cooking duty for the Confederates' headquarters and was within earshot of one of the commanding general's intimate conversations. She learned there of plans to use Quaker guns in the Battle of Yorktown. These were logs painted to look like cannons to act like decoys. She was able to locate many of them and report them back to the Union. She would slip across enemy lines again, this time disguised as an Irish woman peddler named Bridget O'Shea, selling apples and soup to the soldiers. She would come back with a stolen horse, medical supplies, and some more intel. Another time, she would cross into enemy lines as a woman of color. She was assigned to laundry duty and managed to find some official documents in a high-ranking official's jacket pocket. When she returned to the Union with these papers, the generals were all but delighted with her. She would then be given detective-like duties, she claimed, when sent to Kentucky. She disguised herself as Charles Mayberry as a young Southern man. She had a great job and went to society parties and managed to blend right in. In the end, she claims to have uncovered a Confederate network of spies operating in the city. As I stated before, these accounts are from Sarah's alone, as very little can be verified elsewhere. But I can tell you that in the case of the Black Wig, there's a diary entry from a young man who was known for getting supplies outside the camp. He does have a record of getting Sarah that dark wig she needed to be her alias, known as Cuff. On May 5th, 1862, her regiment would come under heavy fire during the Battle of Williamsburg. She was caught in the thick of the battle, and at one particular point actually picked up a musket and began to fire with her comrades. She would also assist as a stretcher bearer on the battlefield transporting the wounded for hours in the pouring rain. The summer of 1862, she continued as a mail carrier, traveling over 40 kilometers again a day in dangerous territories. On August the 29th, 1862, she would take part in the Battle of the Second Manassas. In this battle, her horse was killed and she was forced to ride a mule. After that, she would end up being tossed by the mule into a ditch and breaking her leg. She tended to the injuries herself, fearing being discovered if she sought medical help. This caused her leg not to set properly, which would leave Sarah in constant pain throughout the rest of her life. It was September 17th, 1862, and she would find herself on another battlefield. This time it was Antietam? I'm sure I'm not saying that correctly. Here, while confronting a dying man in her arms, she would state that the youth confessed to her that he was in fact a female soldier who had followed her only brother, who had been killed earlier that day. She would bury the girl nearby under a beautiful tree and honor her secret. In December, she would serve under Colonel Orlando Poe during the Battle of Fredericksburg as an orderly to relay messages back and forth from headquarters and the front lines using her skills on a horse. She would describe Fredericksburg in her memoirs as having terrible cold weather, mud, and having bad roads. In the spring of 1863, Edmonds and her regiment would be assigned to the Army of Cumberland and sent to Kentucky. While posted at a hospital near Vicksburg, Mississippi, it is here she would end up contracting malaria and requesting a furlough, which is a leave of absence from your post. Her furlough was denied. For fear of being discovered if she fell ill and she was in need of medical attention, Sarah forced herself to leave her post around mid-April to seek out a private hospital for treatment. Private Frank Thompson would be labeled a deserter and charged. She checked herself into a private hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with a full intent of returning to her post once better. Once out of the hospital, she saw posters listing Frank Thompson as a deserter. She quickly boarded a train and went straight to Washington, D.C. In June 1863, rather than returning as Frank and facing prosecution, she didn't want to join under another alias. This time, she would join as herself. In Washington, D.C., she would enlist as Sarah Edmonds and was assigned to be a nurse. She would work at the hospital run by the U.S. Christian Commission for the Wounded Soldiers until the war was over. In 1864, Sarah would write and publish her first edition of her memoirs called Unsexed or the Female Soldier. The memoirs were republished in 1865. This version is said to be more fictionalized, and they gave it a new title, Nurse and Spy in the Union Army. The book would sell over 175,000 copies. It was an instant success, and Sarah donated all the proceeds to the U.S. Christian Commission and other soldier-related charities and causes. Today, you can find this book almost anywhere for free. Personally, I listened to her whole audiobook, which I found on the app Castbox, but you can find it anywhere. Even YouTube has a copy. That same year, Sarah would meet her future husband, Linus Seeley, at the hospital she was working at in Harper's Ferry, Virginia. He was from New Brunswick, just like her, and he was someone she had known as a child. The two were married in 1867 and returned home for a visit to Canada. The couple would have three children who all passed away very young. The heartbroken couple would then adopt two sons. After that, they would move all over the U.S., living in places like Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Kentucky. It is said here that they took care of orphans at a shelter for a time, and then finally Texas to be close to her sons and their families. One of her sons was even said to have joined the military to be just like his mom. But there was something still bothering Sarah. It was Frank. She couldn't leave that mark on Frank's record. She couldn't leave that mark on her record. She was not a deserter, and she was going to prove it. In 1867, she attended the reunion of the 2nd Michigan Regiment. She was warmly welcomed by her comrades. They spoke very fondly of their memories of her. She was a good soldier and worked hard. Most were shocked to find out the truth. They even commented at how they had joked about Frank's small boots and hands, often referred to him as the lady of the group, and some even called him Little Woman as a nickname. But they claimed they never knew. What they did know is Sarah's one of them, and they wanted to help her. They would help her by writing statements to the courts in her defense, going to trials and testifying in her defense, to have the desertion charges dropped. In 1883, she began giving lectures and speeches on her story as it became more known. In 1884, she began to fight for her military pension, as her wounds sustained during her time in battle caused her such great pain and suffering over the years. She would receive her military pension in 1886 after a 2-year appeal, collecting affidavits and such. She was the first woman to ever receive this. $12 a month is what she got. Today, this is about $320. In 1897, she would finally receive her honorable discharge. In the end, 13 years after her fight began, Frank's name was cleared under the real Sarah E. E. Seeley, alias Frank Thompson. That same year, she would finally be admitted to the Grand Army of Republic as the only woman member. 1 year later, sadly, in September 1898, she would pass away at 58 years old due to complications of malaria. She is buried in the military section of the Washington Cemetery in Houston, Texas, with full military honors. She is the only female permitted eternal rest in the Civil War veterans' plot. Her plot lies close to an old oak tree, and though barely legible today, reads Emma E. Seeley, Army Nurse. In 1992, Flint, Michigan would put up a statue outside its courthouse commending Edmonds for her wartime activities. In 2005, a plaque in the community of New Brunswick, where Sarah grew up, stands close to where her childhood home once stood. So next time you're on a great self-discovering journey, just simply out for a walk in the woods, or just feel the need to write stuff down, do it. Because it's the stuff that's written down that gets seen, and it's that stuff that gets remembered. And what isn't? Well, it gets forgotten. Sarah's story is here today because she wrote it down. While it may not all be true, hey, it's a really good story, so I don't care if it's all true. I appreciate her work. I also appreciate that she captured a time in history as a woman and what it was like to be a young girl back then. Her book is out there, as I mentioned before. It is an interesting read for sure, and with all the old language, it makes it even more intriguing. Sarah Edmonds is Canada's very own master of disguise, changing her names, cutting off her hair, using accents, joining the Civil War, becoming a nurse, and she did this all while being away from her home with no family to lean on for support. She was a brilliant nurse and loved by all who met her. So many letters, watches, heirlooms, and locks of hair would not have made it home to their loved ones if it was not for Sarah Edmonds and her kind heart and ability to write on the battlefield. We salute you, Sarah Edmonds, for your bravery, your wit, your generous heart, and your ability to blend in to all situations when needed. I'm Canadian Girl. Until next time, my friends. I have a couple podcast recommendations. This time we're going with women only, because it's our month. First goes out to my two new absolute favorite Canadian girls, The Woods Podcast.
Hey there, I'm Shaznay.
And I'm Sandy.
And we are The Woods.
A weekly podcast where we discuss anything spooky, unexplainable, and just plain bizarre.
So please, come take a walk with us, because you never know what you're going to find in the woods.
And my second goes out to, I'm going with two here, because they are both awesome, and I recently just discovered them both. Haunted Happenstance? Host Jennifer will tell you ghost stories from all over Boston. And The Haunted Ride, a paranormal podcast. Host Melissa will take you all over to explore all the spooky and the strange she can find. I will include all these amazing ladies' links down below, so please go check them out now. You will not be disappointed. Want to help support the show? You can do that in three simple ways. The first one, you can leave us a shiny 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This small gesture means so much to this podcast as it allows us to move around on the podcast charts and meet more awesome listeners like you. The second, you can stop by our souvenir shop and pick up a souvenir from one of our great adventures and take it on your very own. There's t-shirts, water bottles, notebooks, and so much more. Do head over to our souvenir shop today and grab some adventure gear. And finally, the third way you can help support the show is by donation. We have a fancy PayPal button that can be found on the top right of our webpage, nothingcanada.com. This button allows you the option to donate as much as you want, whenever you want. All donations will be used for the channel by buying new books for research, paying for the podcast website, and upgrading equipment. All three links to help support the show, of course, can be found in the show notes below. I thank you all so much for your support of the show. It means the world to me. And you guys, who always listen to the very end, you're my very favorite people in the whole world. But you already know that. Don't forget to celebrate the women in your life. This is their month, and they've certainly earned it. I'm Canadian Girl. Spring is coming.